Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, those are the victory horns. You're hearing them at 7:11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and they sound for the underdog. Jairzinho, Biggie Boy, Rozenstruik gets the win, gets the finish, not in the way people expected. Fourth round, referee stoppage, TKO victory. Jairzinho, Rozenstruik back on track. Hands, Shamil Gaziev. I've been pronouncing his name wrong the entire time. Shout out John Anik for telling us how to pronounce it correctly throughout the broadcast. But Biggie Boy back on track as we welcome you to the UFC Vegas 87 post-fight show here at MMAfighting.com. I am Mike Heck, being joined by the incomparable New York Rick, the man with the greatest theme song in MMA. Good to have you here, Rick. It's always a pleasure.
Likewise, thanks for having me, Mike. And I agree with you. I do have the best theme song in MMA. And I'm happy to talk some fights.
Yes. Casey's here on the ones and twos. You'll hear from him later. And because we're going to hear from you guys. And of course, if you want to get your super chats in, you just want to hop right to the front of that line, you can go ahead and do that. So, New York Rick, Jairzinho Rozenstruik wins. Fight was not a quick one, like a lot of people expected it to be. Shamil Gaziev, was absolutely gassed about 7 minutes into this fight. He was fighting with his mouth open through most of round two, all of round three, all of round four, while Jairzinho Rozenstruik was just peppering him with jabs and leg kicks and body shots over and over again. And it seemed like in the fourth round, Rozenstruik probably could have gotten him out of there anyways, but he decided to stay patient, stay poised, if you will. And then in the end, Mark Goddard, being the professional referee that he is, Gaziev having an argument with his coaches, basically telling him, I'm done. I don't think I can do this anymore. I can't see. Mark Goddard tells the doctor to come into the octagon and says, hey, I want to know exactly what he's saying to these guys right now. And he found out Gaziev can't see out of an eye, and without even questioning it, stops the fight. So A-plus refereeing from Mark Goddard, in my opinion. But your reaction to the fight, Rozenstruik's performance, and Gaziev's performance in just a second UFC fight in his first UFC main event.
Yeah, great work by Mark Goddard. Asked the corner to repeat kind of the conversation that was happening. I think he could tell that something was going on there. And they said that he said he cannot see out of that one eye. When reiterated, I believe I actually heard Gaziev say that he couldn't see out of the eye, and then Goddard waved it off. So great job by Goddard kind of trying to get to the bottom of that. Wasn't a main event that we needed to see continue at that point. It seemed like Rozenstruik had completely taken over and Gaziev was done. Why even send him back out there for any additional damage, especially if he's compromised? So great job by referee Mark Goddard, as usual. He tends to be one of the better referees. As far as the performance, you can't really dock Rozenstruik in any capacity. Like, he did exactly what he needed to do. It was a patient performance. It wasn't the blood and guts banger type knockout that potentially sometimes the UFC tries to push when they do these heavyweight main events. But and don't get me wrong, I don't think it was just a byproduct of anything the UFC is saying. I think a lot of people expected this to be over relatively quickly. We did not get that, but it's hard to fault Rozenstruik for any of the things that happened here. He was clearly the fighter who was winning this fight and was trying to finish Gazeev. He was just not being successful. I imagine if he did come out one more round, there's probably a possibility he would have gotten it the cleaner way and been able to finish this fight, but not necessary. A TKO is a TKO. And as far as Gazeev goes, like, not impressive. Like, was just not a performance that's going to make me think that his long-term prospects are very good. Very reminiscent of Abus Magomedov, in my opinion. Like, similar vibes to that, where it was just like, yeah, I've got one round in me, and then you meet somebody who's been around the UFC for a while and you're just cooked. So, not impressive. And Jairzinho did what he needed to do. I don't think there were like huge stakes here, huge implications. So, you know, there's not a lot to really like unpack from this, because Jairzinho will just be in another main event against another lowly ranked heavyweight at some point, and that's what the future is. But yeah, not a lot of stakes here, and went about as expected.
Yeah, there are like no stakes to this fight at all. Yeah. It's crazy. He's about to main event against Waldo Cortez Acosta.
Sure.
Freaking Apex, is he not? But yeah. But New York Rick, why are we not doing the Derek Lewis fight? This is just right there. It's been there for years. It's the most obvious choice. And I kind of feel like the winner of this fight was probably going to get Lewis anyways. And I feel like even if Gazeev won, they just would have threw him right in there with Derek Lewis because he's a big name. And that's the kind of guy you can get over against to some degree. Like, look at Sergey Spivak. He goes out and thumps up Derek Lewis and then gets a main event in freaking Paris with Cyril Gane. And we all know what happened there. But why are we so hesitant to book the Derek Lewis fight? That poster is going to be money. And like, what a fight. Like, that just makes so much sense. There's no way that fight's boring.
With it. You've sold me. Let's book it. Derek Lewis versus Jairzinho Rozenstruik. I'm in.
Okay. Well, we could probably move on here because, again, there's not a lot of stakes. I mean, Vitor Petrino, Tyson Pedro, that fight happened. It was Tyson Pedro's final fight of his career. We had multiple retirements on this card. Tyson Pedro and Jamie Pickett both announced their retirement. So happy trails to both of those gentlemen. Tyson Pedro, always super exciting. Jamie Pickett. And I guess, you know what? Shout out to the UFC. Pickett, they let Pickett fight out the rest of his contract. He said it was going to be his last one. And his career ends on a decision loss to Eric, your boy Anders. But there were two fights in particular that, actually three really, that people continue to talk about. And a couple of highlights as well. Let's talk about the stakes in the feature belt, because this is the one everybody talked about. This is the one everyone's like, this should be the main event. Flyweights, Mohamed Bakayev versus Alex Perez, especially with UFC 301 lingering, coming up in May, and Alexander Pantoja expected to defend his title in that card. We just don't know who the hell he's going to fight, because Brandon Moreno lost to Brandon Royval last week at UFC Mexico City. So Royval says his knee's good. He wants to fight. Mohamed Bakayev, if he goes out there and dusts up Alex Perez, it seemed like the title shot was his. Even Pantoja, speaking to our own Guillermo Cruz, said the same. Bakayev wins, sure, I'll fight him. I think that makes a lot of sense for UFC 301. Bakayev gets the win, and that's the most important thing. Yes, he seems like he's sick. He's tweeting out photos of his own vomit in toilets. But he won. But to you, New York Rick, is this the guy who's about to fight for a world title? Was this the performance that tells you, you know what, the guy needs an opponent, let's just throw him in there with Pantoja and just see what happens? Or is this just not enough? Are the UFC going to have to just completely pivot here to either Royval or somebody else after this?
I think there are two different questions there. I think the question of, is he going to be next, is different than, is this the performance that should make him next? Because the answer to, is he going to be next, is possibly. The answer to, should this be the performance that makes him next, is absolutely not. The performance by Brandon Royval against Brandon Moreno is 10 heads and shoulders above this, 15, 20 heads and shoulders above this performance. Like, it's not even in the same realm. It's not even in the same class. Brandon Royval's performance against Brandon Moreno is in a different stratosphere than what we saw from Makhachev here. So the performance, no, but is he going to be next? Possibly. I mean, Royval is not in a great spot. even though he had a better performance, he's not in a great spot because he's lost to Pantoja twice. Like, there's just a reality to that. And the second one was a drubbing. Like, there was not a good showing from him there. So I would understand if they went a different direction. I would understand why they wouldn't potentially want to go back to Brandon Royval. But if you're asking me if this was the performance that stamped his claim to a UFC title shot, absolutely not. Not impressive.
I honestly don't know what to think about this whole situation, because I'm very curious how the UFC views him in his future right now, because how can you not look at this guy and be like, he's going to be a champion at some point. But when you look at some of the other up and comers,
probably puts a damper on that talk, honestly.
Okay. That's fair. But if the UFC is fully invested in Muhammad Makhachev, like, they are convinced that this guy is going to be a champion for years and years to come once he captures the belt, I actually feel like it would be promotional malpractice to give him a title shot after that performance. Like, I think if you're fully invested in this guy for the next 6 or 7 years, I think throwing him into a title fight right now after that performance would just be awful. Like, I think it's just a bad business decision. And keep this guy cooking a little bit more. He obviously has holes that he needs to improve upon. Let's let him continuously, slowly make these strides, because I do think he's going to get there, and I think he's going to learn from this performance. And Alex Perez, to his credit, is not a scrub. Like, the guy is a solid, like, a solid fighter. He's fought for a belt. He's got on nice winning streaks in this division. He's beat some real good dudes, and I thought he actually fought pretty well. Like, Makhachev couldn't take him down early. He was doing a real good job defending. Yeah, he ended up on his back and ended up in trouble in the final seconds of that round, but it didn't hurt Perez. He kept coming on. He had a good third round. So Perez is just a wily vet, man. He got in there and he got the job done. And to me, it's very important that when you have your worst days, especially when you're an up-and-comer and there's a lot of hype behind you, getting the win is the most important thing. Khamzat Chimaev was like a fight of the year against Gilbert Burns, but a lot of people poo-pooed Khamzat Chimaev after that because, oh, he got tested. He didn't run through Gilbert Burns. He might have even lost that fight. So to me, I think you got to look another direction. And if they're not fully invested in Muhammad Makhachev, then maybe you do throw him in there and just, like, see what he can do. But if I'm fully invested in this kid and I think he's going to be the face of our division for the next 7 or 8 years, once he gets the belt, I think you cannot throw him into a title fight after that. Am I crazy?
Here's where I'd push back slightly. One, I don't think the UFC is capable of that type of long-term planning. I don't think they're able to look at guys and say 8 years from now, this guy's going to be a champion, because the sport is too wild. The sport is too fluid. And you just can't realistically work with timelines like that. UFC wants to get Sean O'Malley in there to win a belt at the first available opportunity that they feel like they can conceivably do it. And then they do it. And you roll the dice on that and you see where it goes. I don't think that's how the UFC operates. I don't think they can look at Makhachev and say, he's going to be the champion in XYZ years and we're going to have to do it that way. I think if they can conceivably put him into a title shot right now, they would. And I don't think that's off the table. And in addition to that, flyweight seems to be the division just because of the lack of true contenders or bad luck or whatever the reasons are, that even if you lose this title shot, you're going to be back there in three fights anyway. You're going to be fighting for a title again in three fights. So I don't think he would lose much stock if he was to go in there against Pantoja, who I think everybody would have him as a massive favorite. Pantoja, that is, as a massive favorite over Makhachev right now. If he lost, he'd be back in three fights anyway. So I don't think there's a lot on the line in terms of that. I don't think the long-term potential of Makhachev is sacrificed in that regard because of how quick it is to get back to a flyweight title shot. I don't think you're really hurting much of anything. He beats Royval or Moreno or somebody on the back end of a loss to Pantoja, and he's right back in there. We just literally saw this with Royval. So I don't think he's at risk of anything there, but I will say it's important to paint the picture and it's important to have all the context. If he truly was sick and this was him at his worst, then it's a pretty decent performance. It's something that you look at and can go, I can understand how he got to this position. I agree with you. I don't think Alex Perez is a pushover. And I think Alex Perez is somebody who is looking at Muhammad Makhachev and saying, if I can stop his takedowns, I have a chance to win this fight, and tried to effectively do that. That was his game plan. In this fight, he just wasn't active enough once he was able to stop those takedowns. So if somebody's coming in with that game plan, it's you're not going to look your best. So I think there are circumstances here where you could say maybe this is the worst we're going to see Muhammad Makhachev look, and that you would hope in a potential title fight he'd look better. I just don't think that he's going to be the guy that's going to come in there and beat Pantoja, especially with the way he's been looking lately. But I also don't hate the idea, just for the idea of Pantoja getting a fresh face. Honestly, if I'm in the UFC shoes, I would ask Pantoja, hey, who do you want to fight? Just give us the name and we'll make it happen. I think he's good enough to have earned that. And I also think there is a lack of really great options here. I think Royval would be the best fight of the potential options. Although I've been seeing a lot of people talking about Kyoji Horiguchi.
Let's go.
I don't hate that. I don't hate that one bit. I think that'd be absolutely incredible. I don't know if that's even in the realm of possibility at this moment in time, but if we're choosing between Makhachev and Royval, I would rather see the Royval fight. I think he would do better. But I don't hate it. I don't hate it either. This is a division that just doesn't have a lot of names at the top. After Manel Kopp blew weight and didn't get that fight, all bets were off. And now we're in a position where there's not like a clear guy who stamped their ticket, but the best performance was Royval by far.
Yeah, I'd be real curious to see what Pantoja has to say about that, because he's already beat Royval twice. Does he look at it like, all right, I'll just beat this dude again? Or is he like, I want to fight somebody different? It's going to be so interesting, because I honestly think a lot of this depends on what happens next week too, because I think if Jailton Almeida goes out there and just runs Curtis Blaydes in like 2 minutes, I could see a big time world where the UFC says, hey, Tommy Aspinall, you want to headline a pay-per-view in Brazil against Jailton Almeida? Let's do that. There's your main event. And then it doesn't really matter who Pantoja fights. He's the co-main event, and he can make the Brazilian fans happy with whoever he fights. So I think a lot of people hamper on that. So
that's rough for Tom Aspinall. That's a rough spot to put Tom Aspinall in. I'm not saying that from the perspective that I think Jailton Almeida beats Tom Aspinall, because right now you ask me, I don't think he does. I think Tom probably beats him. But man, to go into enemy territory after winning the interim title and being told no by Stipe and John and having other plans, that's a rough spot for Tom. But I do like it. I think it's a good main event if they're in Brazil. But if it is ultimately Alexandre Pantoja's card, if they ultimately are hinging this on the Brazilian pay-per-view on Alexandre Pantoja, I'd say just ask him, let him choose. He should be able to pick it. Let him choose what he wants.
Pick Kyoji Horiguchi.
If that's an option, run that immediately.
Oh God, that'd be incredible. So yep, Khaib gets the job done, and hopefully we see better days for him. I would like to see him get one more fight, even if it's like a Brandon Royval. Throw him in there with Steve Ursig. I'd watch the hell out of that fight, because maybe you throw him in there. He goes out and just ices Matt Schnell with a walk-off KO. Why isn't he in the mix? I know he's not like the most, he's not a trash talker or anything, but the man delivered. If this is like John Danik called this moving day for the flyweights. If that's how the UFC viewed this, then Steve Ursig is the mover and shaker of all these flyweights, is he not?
Yeah, man. I was very impressed by Steve Ursig, and have been ever since he came into the UFC, especially the circumstances with which he came into the UFC. The dude's got something, and yeah, you're right. Like, he's not going to be the one who's talking trash and doing that part of the job, but when it comes to the performances, man, he has been absolutely incredible. One of the highlights of the night for sure. I'm a fan of what that dude's bringing to the flyweight division.
Yeah, that was nasty. I actually picked Matt Schnell to have like this come from behind fight, and I thought the fight was always very similar to what we had, but as
he has done before. I don't think you're alone there. I think there's some people who thought Schnell could do something like that. But two action guys. I love that matchmaking, and I love that fight.
That's a crazy fight.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child
didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's talk about what happened in the second fight of the main card. Umar Nurmagomedov, 16-0 heading into this fight, taking on a promotional newcomer, Behzad Almakhan, who, if you're a hardcore fan, you know this guy is pretty damn good. Probably should have been in the UFC anyways. Takes this fight on relatively short notice. They said on the broadcast they were kind of gearing him up to be on the Contender Series, but he takes this fight with Umar. And seconds in, he drops Umar and hurts him bad. And we're just like, oh my God, I cannot believe this is going down. But then Umar just somehow turned a knockdown into a seamless takedown. Like, it was insane how he pulled that off. And then from that point on, Umar, his takedowns just could not be stopped. He started battering Behzad around. And I think it was 230-26s and a 30-25 in there, which I have no issue with either any of those scorecards. Umar moves to 17-0. This guy is very, very good. Calls out Corey Sandhagen to go ahead and rebook that fight. Just to give away my on to the next one selection, it's pretty obvious. That is 1,000,000% the fight I want to see. Your takeaways from Umar Nurmagomedov and his performance?
I'd actually like to start with Almakhan, who I was just impressed with. Like, to step in there against Umar in this environment and this notice, he did well. He did well enough. He was able to escape some rocky positions. He obviously rocked them in the beginning of the fight. And it's just one of those where you go, I really like to see his next fight, because he stepped into deep waters right off the bat. It's, as you said, it sounded like they were grooming him for Contender Series, and instead to then fight Umar Nurmagomedov. Like, that's a huge step up. That's a massive moment. And you kind of think, okay, this was what he needed to do to get into the UFC. Now I'd like to see what he does next and to go from here, but I'm interested in that. Like, I'm interested in what he does next. As far as Umar, like, yeah, he got rocked and then he just completely dominated the rest of the fight. Turned it on, completely controlled it. As you said, 230-26s and 130-25, like, not really in danger from that point on in the fight, and just completely did what he needed to do. Called out Corey Sandhagen. That's the fight to make. And I do think there's an element here where you look at Umar and you don't see the sheer dominance that you saw with Habib or even in Islam, although Islam did get knocked out earlier in his career. But when it comes to bell, you don't see that. And the positional control that Habib had, where it led to some finishes because he was just so far ahead of people, that you could see a world where you could talk yourself into a Corey Sandhagen giving him trouble. Then you can even get higher than that in the rankings and start talking about names like Merab Dvalishvili and others. And there's a world where he doesn't just immediately jump to the top and become the future champion. So I'm also interested in what Umar does from here and how he looks in future performances. There's the elements there. There's the ability to find those takedowns and have that position that we've seen from Habib and the other Dagestani fighters. But I do think there's a little more vulnerability that has been shown, and something that would make his next step more interesting. And if that next step is Corey Sandhagen, extremely interesting.
Yeah, I just want to keep seeing this dude fight. Like, I really do. All right, we're trying to figure out bonuses. We will let you know the second we hear about them. I think we know what the performance of the nights are. Steve Ersig is one of them. We will get to the other one in a moment. Shout out the rest of the winners. Eric Anders hands Jamie Pickett his final loss of his career. Ayman Zahabi with the upset win over Jabib Bashirat. That was crazy. Yes. What a victory.
He was like something like a 6-1 dog or something. I mean, an insane.
He was like a plus 535 or something like that. It was nuts.
Yeah.
Great fight. Great fight. Great performance. Ariel Helwani just crushing it inside that octagon. Christian Leroy Duncan finishes Claudio Ribeiro. Claudio Ribeiro had nothing for CLD at all. CLD just looking a little violent in there. Good performance. Ludwig Klein just bodies up AJ Cunningham, who was tougher than a $2 steak. I was so glad that he got him out of there, because I just did not want to see AJ Cunningham come out for another round. Looking forward to see Cunningham at 145, though, on a full camp. Dude is a dog, and I am excited to see what is next for him. Loic Rajbitov pulls off an upset early, gets a finish in the opening fight. But how about Vinicius Oliveira, New York, Rick? Crazy fight with Sopai, and it is wild. It is crazy. Vinicius Oliveira hurts him real bad, and then kaboom, flying knee from hell, lands absolutely perfect. That was one of the scariest knockouts you will ever see. Like, I looked at that knockout and I think to myself, I don't know how this guy's ever going to be the same again after getting knocked out like that. It was just a game changer. It is definitely going to be on our list for knockouts of the year at the end of the year. I'd be stunned if it isn't. What a freaking knee that was.
Incredible. When he had him lined up against the cage, I was like, oh boy, whatever he's about to do is going to be brutal. And when he landed that flying knee, yeah, I mean, clearly going to be one of the knockouts of the year. Loke Dog era is beginning. Like, I'm a fan. I'm all in on this. Like, that was some vicious, vicious stuff. And his contender series knockout was also one of those that makes you go, oh, okay, this is a guy. This is somebody I need to pay attention to. Flying knee for the ages, incredible knockout. My most memorable moment from this card, hands down. I will remember this Loke Dog KO forever.
Yeah. Absolutely. Still waiting on a fight of the night. But yes, Steve Erceg, Vinicius Oliveira, well-earned $50,000 for those performances. And man, this card was something. Prelims started off on fire. Everyone's like, oh yeah, boy, wait till we get to the main card. Steve Erceg kicks it off with a big knockout. And then, you know, things kind of, well, I mean, the Umar performance is impressive. And then, you know, not tremendously action-packed fights the rest of the way, but that is UFC Vegas 87 is in the books. We will let you know what the fight of the night is, if there is one, or maybe they just had a couple performance ones, or maybe they just said to themselves, you know what? There is no fight of the night. Just these two guys get bonuses, which I think would be a little bit unfair. But in the meantime, let's bring in E.K.C. Lydon. Let's hear from the peeps. There he is.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Hi.
Oh, a Khalil Roundtree question. I know New York Crook would love that.
I love Khalil Roundtree. Let's talk.
How can you not? How can you not?
All righty, man, no love for Makhachev. I was like, I didn't feel that way about the fight, but if that's what you saw,
tell us what did you take away?
That Makhachev is really good, and I think Alex Perez is a top 10 flyweight, and he I just think Makhachev is getting better, and he just is an incredible scrambler, an incredible wrestler. And I actually was entertained by the fight. Yeah, I would like to see maybe more damage, but I think we say that about every Makhachev fight. But Makhachev is just, he's just tough. And like, I just think he's really good. And I think if I'm Pantoja, I take the Makhachev fight right now, because I don't think Makhachev is getting worse. He's going to get better. So beat him up now. Beat him up. He called for the title fight right at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he called for it.
You got your promo. You got your quote. You got your put in the promo. Put Joe Rogan saying he's an animal. You know, all that stuff. You got it. So I think Makhachev's younger. I think Makhachev's young enough to if he does lose to Pantoja and gets his butt kicked, he can grow from it and then become better. And then we'll see him when he's 25 instead of 23 or whatever. I mean,
it sounds like we're mostly on the same page. Do you think that that performance was better than Royval's? Do you think that kind of cruising in the final three rounds against Moreno is less impressive than
it was equally as impressive? My big issue, actually, I want to bring this up. Sorry. My big issue with the Makhachev, though, is he fought the Apex on the third fight from the top. It wasn't even like the co-main. It wasn't even like a featured fight. Yeah. And that's actually the bigger issue from a promotional standpoint. Who saw this fight? what weirdos were at home watching this. Watching this.
Good point.
You know, and Roy Vaugh fought main event, fight night, sold out arena. That's why I would still give it to Roy Vaugh, just because from a promotional standpoint. But I have no issue with Makhachev getting it. And if they want a fresh matchup, I would do Pantoja Makhachev, because Makhachev, I think, can handle a loss and come back from it. And the UFC can have this really kind of, I know he's not the youngest champion, but the second youngest champion ever, you know, all that stuff. So I think there's a lot of ways to go. But I'm not poo-pooing Makhachev's performance as much as maybe you are. Or like saying
I
think we agree.
I think we're on the same page.
Okay.
He won. That's all that matters. Mm-hmm.
I had Roy Vaugh having a better performance, mm-hmm. right? Like significantly, especially against the level of competition mm-hmm. that Brandon Moreno is. But yeah, I wouldn't poo-poo a Makhachev title shot.
Yeah.
I just don't think this was the performance that goes, I need to have the title shot. Whereas he had that opportunity, right?
Yeah.
He goes out there and smokes him. It's his. It's his title shot.
I just don't think it was possible, honestly, the card placement and on an Apex card compared to what Roy Vaugh had in a sold out arena. I just think everything was set up for Roy Vaugh, but I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. That's all.
I honestly think, cause I would be stunned if Dana White does a press conference. I'd be stunned if he was even in the building for this card, but Venetius and Sopai fight of the night. So Venetius gets two bonuses. Congratulations.
He deserves it.
He got the full 400K. Good for him.
They haven't done that in a while.
Good for him.
Was Tristan Connolly the last guy to do that?
Yeah, the Pereira fight?
Yeah, because Pereira missed weight, so he got the whole 100K for fight of the night.
Oh, okay. We got the other side, but I can't remember. Yeah, someone got fight of the night and performance. So, yeah.
It's been a minute.
Congrats.
It's been a minute. No, but what I was saying is Dana – because if Dana goes up and does a press conference today, you know he would be asked about Makhachev. Is he going to fight Pantoja?
Yeah.
And Dana White is not going to come out and say, yeah, he's next. He's not going to do what he did with Merab after he beat Cejudo and be like, yeah, dude, Merab's fighting the winner of Sean O'Malley versus Marlon Vera. He's next. When he is asked about that, he'll say, I don't make fights the night of the fight. We'll have a matchmaking meeting on Tuesday type of answer. You know what I mean? And I think that would probably hurt Makhachev's chances, but maybe it helps that post-fight press conference isn't happening and we don't have a quote that's all over the internet of Dana saying, not ready to say that. I don't know. Matchmaking meeting on Tuesday. So we'll see what happens. But I do agree with New York Rick. Ask Pantoja. You pick. You decide. Because that's kind of the position he's in right now. So,
and this is all the assumption that we think that Pantoja is going to be on 301, right?
They don't have many other options, and it seems like he's been kind of forecasting that. So
yeah, they could run a interim BMF belt. Who knows? This is the UFC. Come on,
that's true.
But I see what everyone's talking about. I see the comments. You know, Makhachev, you know, he was on his knees the whole time. Yeah, it's like whatever.
Yeah, dude, no one's arguing his ceiling. Like it's a high ceiling. Mm-hmm. He's good. Dude's real young and real good.
There's an argument, though, to send him to that title fight too soon and maybe take a hellacious butt kicking. But the boy wants it, man. He's been fighting at a high level for a bit now, and I'm down for it. But
I wouldn't be mad if they threw him in there with – yeah, I wouldn't be mad if they threw Makhachev in there with, like, Nicolau or Kopp or any Kaikar France, like any of these guys. Like, I wouldn't be mad if they did that, and then if he comes out and has like a undeniable performance, then you give him the shot. But either way, if they give him the shot now, they give him the shot, and we'll see what he can do.
Cool. All right, got some questions. Got some super chatties first.
Let's go.
Got Casey Carpenter here.
All right. There's one super chat I'm waiting for because I know it's coming.
Who could that be?
Something we talked about. I think we know. Casey Carpenter is Jarzyn Rozdrak the Apexy champion?
Is there one?
I guess.
Is it? I mean, a new title.
I saw some comments saying, "Is Apexy the new middleweighty?"
I kind of feel like Brennan Allen could be the Apexy champion too.
What is the distinction between
Apex?
What is this distinction between middleweighty and Apexy though? What are the shades?
Put that back in. Describe what an apexy means. Put it in terms we'll understand. I don't know. All just right. Someone who shines at the apex. Rosenstrike kind of does well in the apex. Got a lot of main events there.
Okay. Got a super chat from our buddy Terrence Leverett.
Terrence, Umar doesn't deserve Corey. He's a wrestler.
I'm okay. Umar deserves Corey just from the simple fact that Corey's the only one who seems willing to fight him that's ranked above him. Like the opportunities are few and far between. The fact that Corey, I mean, I think honestly, I believe it says more about Corey than anything. The fact that Corey is willing to potentially sacrifice his ranking in a fight with Umar says the world of Corey Sandhagen. Because he's not one of those people who in his heart believes he deserves to be fighting up and fighting for belts and fighting in number one contender fights. But he seems to be the only one who can put that to the side at certain times and do what needs to be done and fight Umar. So the fact that he's even already pre-saying yes to it and considering it and has already been booked in it, that's the fight to make. Because quite frankly, like, who else are you going to get to say yes? Like, it doesn't really happen.
The predictions coming into this fight calling Umar versus Almakan? How do you say his name?
Yeah.
Almakan. Yeah, that could be like the potential, like, was it Armin versus Islam Makhachev? Sure. And you know what? Those comparisons, we'll have to go back on this fight in a couple of years, but that could have been there because that gentleman did look very good. He did look like we will see him as a minimum top 15 bantamweight for a good while.
Was that the most impressive 30-25-ing you've ever seen? Like, I can't think of a guy who's ever looked better getting 30-25'd.
Is this true? Yeah.
He looked good. He looked like he belonged in there in the worst of circumstances, mm-hmm. right? Hey, you're coming into the UFC, short notice, fight Umar, let's go. Like, that's not an easy thing, but he looked as good as you could look for getting 30-25'd.
And look at this, like, Terrence, we love you, but Umar 30-25 the man, and we're still saying, does Umar really deserve to move up the rankings? Like, all those criticisms of taking this fight kind of came back. Now we're hearing it now. Well, he didn't destroy him in 10 seconds, so clearly this is like a loss for Umar, which it wasn't. It was a very good fight. And I know, and he still destroyed him, but he didn't finish him, and he got hit once, you know? Yeah. So it's just...
This is what makes what Corey is potentially doing here so much more impressive, because when you do that, when you fight down, when you fight somebody who's that many spots away, if you don't look like a world beater, people go, oh, you stink. And Corey's like, I just want to test Corey Sandhagen, God bless him. I don't want to make this like a Corey Sandhagen love fest, but I do really love Corey Sandhagen and his mentality toward fighting has consistently said, he is interested in winning championships. He wants to prove he's the best. But the path to that is fighting and testing himself against the best fighters in MMA. That is how you prove you're the best. It is not rank versus rank. It is not this versus that. It is give me the best possible MMA opponent that I can get at the moment, and I will fight them. And if I beat them, give me the next best. And he continues to stay on that path. And if Umar is the guy that can get him to the next level above that, then that's what he'll do. And shout out to Corey Sandhagen, and all respect to Corey Sandhagen, because he is living a true martial arts lifestyle, and they're fewer and further between these days. And that's why it's hard, because most people don't have that mentality. Most people want to sit on their ranking as long as they can and only fight people above them. And credit to Umar for taking this fight. Like, he deserves credit.
Hell yeah.
Like, this is what this is.
Big, yep. big risk.
That's the most
risk.
Dangerous fight. It's the most dangerous yes. fight there is. A good fighter that nobody knows. Like, it's a very dangerous thing. Two last things I want to say about that real quick. One, I want the Corey fight because I want to see how good this guy is. There are people on our website that are already saying that Umar Nurmagomedov is the best bantamweight in the world. Right now, he's the best bantamweight in the world. They're saying this. And I don't agree with that, but it doesn't mean that they're wrong. I'm not convinced of that yet. He is very, very good. He might be that guy. But if he goes out there and 30-25's Corey Sandhagen, then I'm like, okay, damn, this dude's going to win a belt.
Well, hopefully that would be.
I want to see that.
Hopefully that'd be a main event, and maybe it's, you know, 50-43 or something if he's able to pull that off. But that's interesting. I'm interested in those people that believe he's the best. But to your point, like, that's not what I've seen yet, but I'd be interested to find out. I definitely want to find out.
And then, by the way, remember Corey Sandhagen's last fight?
Yeah.
Who did he call out? Who did he call out after he won his last fight? He didn't call for a title fight. He called for freaking Merab Dzhawashvili. Nobody calls for Merab. Nobody.
But he wants to fight the best guys. Corey's the freaking man.
Give me the worst matchup. Give me the worst matchup.
By the way, I think Merab is the best guy. I think Corey had that right, and the people at MMA Fighting who rank Merab as number one are probably correct.
Yeah.
Love it. Okay. Just a great, just the best division. The best division.
Just the best division behind lightweight.
Yes. Thank you, Mike.
Moving on. Sorry, internet went out there. Sorry.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I got a super chat from Super Samoan Legal Team.
Urseg equals Dark Horse. He might be.
I am very interested in his next fight. Now, okay. Now I'm like, all right. I want to see. I'm sold on him now. As far as being a contender, a top 10 guy. I'm ready for the Urseg era. I want
to
see it
for a division to be a dark horse in. This is the best one, right? Because you can move up the rankings quick here. You can skip half the steps in flyweight because they are desperate for people to challenge for these titles. There have been rematch after rematch after rematch. If you can string together 3-4 in a row, you're getting close. I mean, Makhachev, right, is somebody who is now 6-0 in the UFC, 4 finishes. Like, he's putting the work and he's there. Like, Urseg, you get a few more and you're there. You're knocking on the door already.
It's 3-0.
This is a great division. Yeah. You get one, two more, and it's like, I'm there. I'm right there. So yeah, I don't hate it. I think Urseg is a fan favorite and everybody's kind of excited to see what he does.
I agree.
God, when he fights Tetsuro Taira down the line.
Oh my God. I kind of forgot about Taira. Yeah. Taira's right there too.
That sucks. Give Tetsuro a rank guy. Let's go. Right. But yeah, Urseg could fight, like, him and Amir Albazi would be fun. Like, I actually think that's a realistic.
Oh, that's interesting. Right. That's very high up to jump. That's interesting. I like that.
That makes sense. I dig it.
I don't see Amir Albazi taking that fight though.
He's not Umar. He's not going to fight that far down the rankings.
He's just fighting too far down.
All right. Another super chat.
Michael. Good name, my friend. Biggie Boy versus the winner of Tuivasa Tybura is my pick. All right. We're getting on to the next one picks. I don't hate it. Biggie Boy versus Tuivasa is a good time.
As long as it's an Apex.
Marcin Tybura. I don't know. The Apex. He's got to defend his Apexy title against somebody. I hope it's Ty Tuivasa and not Marcin Tybura.
I like this fight. I have no problem with it. I'm okay.
Wow,
with
hating on Ty Tybura. Tybura. You know what
I said? Tybura is fine.
You can't get excited for Tybura. Oh, I'm joking. No one can.
I'm just picking. They did try to make that fight a couple of times. So maybe it's due. Maybe third time's the charm.
Stylistically, Tuivasa and Rosenstreich could be fun. You know, the technical striking versus the more wild but powerful striking of Ty Tuivasa could be fun because I think he could get Rosenstreich into a firefight where Rosenstreich either wins or gets slapped, and that would be fun. So, yeah, I dig that fight.
Let's go.
All right, gentlemen. We have a super chat. A $9.99 super chat.
Oh, shout out.
Is that who it is? Is who I'm expecting?
Who is it?
Achilles, let's go. Some extra cheddar since I balled out tonight. Rick, 7 out of 10, agree with you today for once. Casey and Mike, 10 out of 10. Jan and Song, fight of the night next week. By the way, let's just shout out Achilles real quick.
Okay.
And then New York Rick, you can go. Achilles jumped on our People's Pre-Fight show and said, rate this parlay. And let me pull it up real quick. Because Casey sent it to me. I just was thinking about it the exact. Oh, you got it right now? All right.
Oh, no, I don't have it. Oh, no. I lied.
I'll read it. He had Zahabi, Anders, Bakhayev, Nurmagomedov, Petrino, and Rosenstrike. That's what he said. Those are his picks.
So I assume that's and why said he's balling out. So I'm assuming that he made some extra cheddar off that. That's great. Congratulations, Achilles Jr. Well done.
This is the actual tweet from comment earlier. There you go.
But I'm also confused, Achilles. I'm a little confused.
Yeah, Mike.
No, I'm confused because I believe you tweeted me and you said you're in Texas. It's your tweet. I believe this is you. Texas is dumb and I can't make a real parlay, but man, that would have paid out handsomely. And it looks like a DraftKings lineup, which it appears you won money. So you did ball out a little bit. So did we actually cash a parlay here or did we made this in the DraftKings lineup, but still made some money?
I'm also just interested in what the odds on that parlay are. Like I haven't heard exactly what the number is. So I'd like to know. If you could send that in. I also appreciate a 7 out of 10 because so far I've been getting ones and twos and zeros and you haven't agreed with anything I've said. So maybe we're turning over a new leaf. Let me know. Maybe we can, you know, meet up and squash the beef, shake hands, be friends, pick a spot, maybe super chat in where we could meet up and perform this action. And let's move on. But shout out to Achilles Jr. Hopefully he's balling out on that. And you pay for that lunch because of this parlay that you won. we can be friends moving forward.
Congrats, man. I mean, just throwing that out there for the world to see is impressive. Zahabi, I even said on the People's Pre-Fight Show, I'm like, if Zahabi wins, like you have a real good chance of cashing this. But I didn't think he was going to win. But
he also asked an actual question that I forgot. Song Yadong and Peter Yan for fight of the night next week. Is it possible? Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, there's other ones I'd probably pick above it, but I think it has as good a chance as anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. On a card where Dustin Poirier and Benoit Saint-Denis are about to fight each other. That's going to be tough.
There's some real all action guys on this card. Like there's a lot that could potentially be fight of the night. I wouldn't be surprised if we end up with no fights of the night and getting lots of performance and bonuses from finishers and things like that. So yeah, but I don't think it's not in the running. I think that style matchup could be pretty damn fun.
Boy, the stakes for this fight for Petr Yan are off the freaking charts, man. I mean, he's all in on this one. This is do or die. For a guy who was just the champion everyone thought was the best bantamweight in the world not that long ago.
And then I think there's some people who still I think there's some people who still think he's there that think, you know, look, it's been a tough run, but like he's still in that kind of class and still in that category. I mean, this would be an opportunity to prove that.
He obviously lost to Merab, so he's not the best bantamweight in the world. But I thought he beat O'Malley. I thought he beat Sterling in the rematch. So, you know, if I just go by what I think, you know, he's kind of like the number two bantamweight, you know, if the judges wouldn't have gone my way. But we're here. Yeah. So we'll see.
Four fight losing streak for Petr Yan. It's a big one next week.
He needs it.
Yan's like real good. Yeah.
He needs it.
It's a good fight.
He needs it in the sense that if he wants to be a contender, but maybe he's just a top 10 bantamweight. We don't know. A top 15 bantamweight. I guess that's, I mean, I don't, does he get cut
if he loses? No, he's not going to be cut.
Yeah. So, yeah. All right. Well, we'll have so much. We'll talk about it next week. Yeah. Until then.
I eat does. Okay. I was trying to like not bisbing myself into saying something that I shouldn't say. Yeah. We're good. Why are we wasting Anik on the call tonight? He needs to rest his sweet, sultry vocals for the incredible UFC 299 card next week. Shout out to John Anik for a number of things he said, including, by the way, a Francis Ngannou name drop. So kudos to John Anik for that. Oh, Dewey Cooper's not here because he's in Saudi with Francis Ngannou. Oh. I was like, yeah, way to go. And then he was like, we're in the Apex here, and boy, you can hear a pin drop. Not used to these Apex cards. I love that too.
Was he in Mexico City? Did he do the Mexico City call?
And I don't know. I don't remember.
I do not remember.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
I think it was Fitzy, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
Either way.
I don't honestly remember.
Is the assumption that he did this card because they booked it as if it was going to be in Saudi? Like, why did he do this
card?
Could be.
It could be.
That makes sense. Okay.
I can't think of another reason. But again, you're right. I'm just at an absence of reasons, and that's the only thing I can think of. But I'm sure
Anik was thrilled when it didn't happen in Saudi. It was happening in Vegas. Because if he had to do that, fly all the way to Saudi, call the car, and then fly all the way back, that'd be tough. But luckily, $299 is not far from where he lives, so that's going to be good for him.
Hey, come on. UFC treats him right. He gets business class, right? He gets a layback, you know, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it's still a long flight.
Yeah, it is a long flight. What you say? Yeah, and yeah, it is a sweet, sultry vocal. Yeah, his voice.
Sure is. He'll be good to go.
All right. Ooh, we got a $9.99 super chat from Terrence Leverett.
Let's go, Terrence.
Okay. The reason I say that, we're going back to the other comment where he said he doesn't deserve it. Umar, that is, pronounce pal. The reason I say that is because Corey is a stylistic favorite matchup. I want to see grappler versus grappler. We don't see enough of it. What happens when he has to stand? Corey Sandhagen's a pretty damn good grappler, guys. He's a tricky tricksman on that mat, and he's a very good scrambler, and he's pretty damn good down there as well. I know he's more known for his striking and his movement, but I want to see this because Corey is about as well-rounded of a 35er in this division, where he excels in just about every aspect. And that's what I want to see. And he can friggin' crack too. So that's why I say it. But what do you think of this, New York Rick?
I understand where Terrence is coming from, but I also am looking at the reality of the division, right? If you look at the ranked bantamweights, like really the only names that you're potentially talking about are Cejudo and Dvalishvili. Sterling still has a ranking, but Sterling is going to be a featherweight. So you're really talking about either Cejudo and Dvalishvili. Cejudo I wouldn't hate, but I don't imagine they do that. It seems like the Dagestan and Cejudo camps are a little too friendly. Maybe they would. Maybe that'd be an opportunity that Henry would take now that he's not retired and say, hey, I'll fight Umar. I'm okay with that. I don't have a problem with that. I can't see Merab doing it. And I think it would be rough for Merab, who has consistently kind of been the guy getting stiffed, to then fight down. As we just gave everybody credit for fighting down, he's one where I'd say he's done enough that we don't need him to fight down, and he should be next for the title. So if you're interested in a fight with Cejudo, I don't hate it. I'd be interested in that. I'm not hating Umar versus Cejudo, but I do think potentially we're underestimating Corey Sandhagen's grappling in this.
Absolutely.
Like, I think that dude is really good on the ground. If you haven't seen the Yuri Alcantara fight, go do yourself, have a treat. If you're an MMA fan, go watch Corey Sandhagen versus Yuri Alcantara. And I think your feeling on how good a grappler Corey Sandhagen is going to change. Because that man has been put in some very, very bad positions and come out on top. And I think his grappling's really good, man, both offensive and defensive.
Dude, yep. I mean, it was an incredibly not entertaining fight, but he just out-grappled and wrestled Rob Font for 5 rounds of one arm.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Rob Font isn't, you know, ADCC champion, but he is a high-level bantamweight who knows how to defend takedowns, who knows how to get up. So don't sleep on Corey Sandhagen.
Yeah, I do. I will say, though, I think there is a level between Corey and maybe a Cejudo or a Sterling or a Dvalishvili in terms of like focus on grappling, right? In terms of wanting that to be a bigger part of the game plan. I think Corey Sandhagen's most of the time more willing to strike, although he mixes it up as well as nearly anybody in MMA, but it seems to stay on the feet longer than, let's say, a Sterling or Cejudo type fight. Or definitely a Merab type fight. So I'm okay if we get somebody who can test Umar's grappling, but I don't see many names. It really is just like Cejudo at this point. So I'm game for that fight, but I'd also think Corey would test him everywhere as well. So good choices to have if you're Umar. And if those guys are willing to fight.
I like Cejudo, but I think he's going to – Cejudo wants that Moreno fight, and I actually think that makes a lot of sense. So
makes a lot of sense.
A couple more super chats.
Yes.
Awesome. Thank you. Another Michael. Guys, slow down on Erceg before it becomes JDM.
Both those guys are great, so I'm not slowing down nothing.
Hell no.
I love those guys.
Look, I mean, what do you want him to do? Like, the dude was ranked after his first UFC fight. He took it on short notice and got ranked right away. And then he's delivered since. So let's give him a little steppy step and see what he can do.
Slow down before he becomes 11th ranked JDM. Like, that's a good spot to be in. I wouldn't be mad about being JDM.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's about to fight next week against Gilbert Burns? Fun ass fight.
Yeah. Who could, at the end of next week, be looking at top five ranked JDM? Like, if that's the bad outcome, damn, then Erceg's in for a good ride.
For a guy that we didn't even hear of a few months ago, now potentially, you know, a top 10 flyweight in the UFC. Yeah.
I think what Michael's getting at, though, is maybe the Hafez fight, like, you know, showed some things in JDM's game that maybe we were putting the cart a little bit ahead of the horse, but I do tend to throw out some of those in the weird circumstances, like switching opponents 14 times on a week's notice. I tend to like kind of dismiss those and wait for the next one and see where we're at. But I don't know. Erceg looks good against the competition he's faced. He's looked really good, but yeah, he may not be, you know, the next big thing. He may not be shooting up the rankings, but the only way we're going to find out is when somebody says, okay, Steve Erceg, I'll fight you and let you potentially take my ranking.
All right. Got a super chat from Bleezy.
Bleezy. Ariel versus Adrian Yanez. Makhachev should take one more. What do you think? Adrian Yanez versus Amin Sahabi.
I'm just going to take a quick peek at the rankings. Is Yanez? Oh, yeah. By the way, Yanez, right?
Yeah.
And he's no longer ranked, unless my eyes are deceiving me. I could be lying, but no, he's no longer ranked. So, I don't hate it. I don't hate that at all.
Yeah.
What is Yanez booked?
No.
Is he in the wind right now?
He's in the wind.
Yeah,
right
let's
now.
Do
he's
it.
Finished in his last two let's fights. He got leg kicked. He got leg kicked into an oblivion by Jonathan Martinez. It was bad.
Yep. Let's do it.
I'm cool with that.
So let's do Ariel versus who's Jonathan Martinez fighting next?
He's ranked 10 though.
Yeah,
that's high. I don't see him potentially getting that one.
Jonathan, he could get Rob Font. I don't know. Mario Bautista, Rob Font is fun too. I mean, we'll see. I wouldn't give Eamon a rank guy just yet.
Sure, whatever.
He's close. He's close. Who's 15 in the UFC bantamweight rankings right now?
I got a super chat from Trill House here.
What's up, Trill House? Makhachev wouldn't win if ground and knees were legal.
I get the implication here, and I understand why, but I think we have to acknowledge, and I've seen some of this before, we have to acknowledge that, like, if the rules were different, the fight would be different, right? He wouldn't be putting himself in the same positions and doing the same things if he was in danger in those positions. So he's adapting to what the rule set is and as any fighter would do. So I don't think it's as easy as being like, well, now somebody can punt or knee him in the head and all of a sudden he's just going to be a sitting duck. I think he would just adapt to a different style. Would that potentially put him in more danger because of his style? Yeah, maybe. Maybe there's worlds where he's putting himself in spots that were previously not dangerous and now are a little more dangerous, but I have to think he is not a stupid fighter. He is not somebody who will make himself vulnerable in ways that could potentially be this harmful. So I think he'd be able to adapt the style, as would many of the fighters who are grappling based.
Yeah, Makhachev wouldn't win if knives were legal.
Yeah.
I mean, His a lot of his wrestling, when he gets stuffed, he relies on the fact that he can't get kneed in the head. That's completely normal of any grappler who fights MMA.
Yeah.
That's why ground and knees should be legal, because it makes the fight more exciting.
And maybe there's a world where early on, as let's say they do legalize this, right? And it seems like California is interested in doing some of this. Let's say they do fight in California, and this maybe the first couple of fights, there would be some potential danger here, right? Maybe getting used to that new rule and adapting your style might put them in potential danger. But I think long term, like, it's not a situation where if all of a sudden this rule came into play, Makhachev would just be ineffective, right? There's ways that you can adapt your game to this, and he'd be smart enough to do that.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Absolutely.
By the way, Eamon Zahabi versus Ricky Simon. He's the number 15th ranked guy. I like that fight.
Oh, let's do it.
Let's do it. We have a super chat, a $4.99 super chat from an Achilles Jr.
Yay, my best friend.
+$3.30-$3.45 is what it would have been if I didn't live in Texas. Can't make a real parlay, but $30 is cool too. Yes, it is. Turn five into 30, into 35. So well done. Oh my God, that's so funny.
I thought Texas is all about freedom. What's going on? Jeez.
I got to see if this is true. It's being reported right now by MMA Mania that the Taffa swap is complete because Junior stepped in for Justin, and now Justin is stepping in for Junior.
No way. That's incredible. That's incredible. They swapped fights.
They swapped fights. This is tremendous stuff.
That's so smart.
I'm gonna see if this is true. I'm gonna see if this is true.
If this was choreographed, if they discussed this and made it happen, that's even more, like, that even blows my mind more. That's just incredible. It'd be like, I don't like this matchup too much. Oh, you like this one better. We're seeing things. Like, let's swap. If they calculated this, like, next level. Yeah. Next
Junior,
level.
If Junior would have won, then I think it's a much, it'd be a much more interesting story. But yeah, it's still very silly. But here we are.
Wow.
And
wow.
I got messages out on this, by the way.
All right. And our last super chat, maybe, from Casey Carpenter once again.
Apexy has no weight. Middleweighty has to be a middleweight. Although you can make a compelling case that the co-main event was a middleweighty light heavyweight fight.
Yeah, that's my understanding of middleweighty, right? Can it apply outside of the middleweight division if it just is reminiscent of being a middleweighty fight?
I mean, we try to use that example. It's not like there's no middleweighty lightweight fights. You know what I mean? It's got to be like 185 and up. There's middleweighty heavyweight fights. There's middleweighty light heavyweight fights. There's obviously middleweight fights. And by the way, I think Eric Anders might actually be the middleweight champion now.
Feels that way. Goes that way. He's the first ballot Hall of Famer as far as middleweight.
Oh, he's the number one contender. He's the number one contender. If there's a money in the bank for the middleweight title, Eric Anders is in it. Like, he's won the beat the clock challenge. He's in.
I mean, we need to have a definition of apexy. Is this a construction of Casey, or is this a not our Casey, but Casey Carpenter, or is this a construction of MMA fighting that I wasn't aware of? Did Apexy originate with us or with Casey?
In the comments
I've described like Apexy to just describe a card as a whole. Like there have been some Apex cards. Like this one, it was an Apexy sort of main event, but it wasn't like an Apexy Apex card, because there were fights with stakes, but we have had cards with like no stakes at all, including the main event. That to me is an Apexy Apex card. Apex fighter.
The first time we get a fight that's outside the Apex, that's Apexy. That's going to be monumental. That's going to be sick. When we get like a fight night in some random American city, that's Apexy. Now we're cooking with gas. That's going to be sick.
UFC Topeka.
Yeah.
Apexy. Exactly. That's Apexy.
The site fee was too much, but the card was just not able to come together in that way. Apexy. I'm ready for it.
Love it.
Are we good? You want to take some more? We got more questions. We're out of super chats, but we got some more questions. A couple more.
Find the best one, because Game Bread's on.
Yeah. So. Oh, okay. Best one. Is it yes or no? Just a yes or no answer. Oops. Where'd it go?
Will Tommy Aspinall defend at 301 versus Jairzinho Rozenstruik?
Yeah.
No.
All right.
If they move 301 to the Apex, perhaps.
Tom, we got to fight for you. It's finally time.
More trivia. This for Ghazeev. What continent is Bahrain located? What's the size of Bahrain? How many islands make up the kingdom of Bahrain? What famous tree is in Bahrain?
Couldn't tell you. Have no idea. I have no idea.
We did the Jarzinho. We did the Jarzinho deep dive into Suriname and all of the specifics to it, and it was a tremendous time. But that would have been a great like beginning of the show question. But we will answer it perhaps on BTL or maybe on Heck of a Morning. That could be like the opening topic on Tuesday.
I just know Bahrain's in the Middle East. After that, I'm done. Yeah, that's about all. But
I'm curious what the famous tree is, but we'll find out.
But thank you, Profites Info, for expanding our mixed martial arts geography knowledge.
I feel more cultured after I have just Googled where Bahrain is. So thank you.
And,
do you know what the tree is?
I didn't get that far. I was just looking surface level at Wikipedia. West Asia, turns out, is the continent. So, being in the Middle East, yeah.
All right.
Okay. Guys, a couple things. One, go watch Game Bread because it's going to be fun as hell. That's going down right now. And if you got things to do, follow along at MMAfighting.com. We'll be watching. I'll be watching. It's a tremendous website and it should be a lot of fun. But we are officially on the road, ladies and gentlemen, to UFC 299. We are officially on the road to a very busy week in combat sports. The aforementioned Francis Ngannou getting ready to box Anthony Joshua on Friday. We're going to have 299 Saturday. Two watch parties next week. It's going to be wild times, my friends. It's going to be wild times. So, maybe get some rest. Saddle up. Get some food. Watch some Game Bread. Get a good night's sleep. And then get ready for a very busy week, everybody. So thank you all very much. For Casey, for New York Rick, I am Mike Keck. Good night, everybody. Only on MMA Fighting, baby. Only on MMA Fighting. The thumbs up you dropped yesterday was tremendous.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.